Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Davis, the pod medic, and we've got a fantastic show for you this week. It's part two of an episode we began last week where we interviewed Dr. Drew Harrell, the medical director for the Grand Canyon National Park. Their service deals with all sorts of rough terrain, swift water rescue, rabid animal outbreaks, high angle rescue, airlifts, and more. And they've had a lot of serious challenges that they put in front of their responders through the Park Service and the responders there. So we thought we'd take this episode. It was long. We wanted to make sure we didn't take up too much of your time at one break. So this is going to be the second half of that episode with Dr. Harrell. We also have my co-host Sam Bradley, Dr. Joe Holly from Paragon Medical Education Group, and our good friend BJ Schneider from New Orleans on the show. And of course, our weather guy, Kyle Nelson, is also on to bring us a weather update from the week we recorded this. So go ahead and check that out, and we'll be back with more episodes soon. In the meantime, here's part two of our episode on response in the Grand Canyon National Park.
But Kyle, you know, you're coming from a place where you're a mountain dude, and now we're talking about the deepest place in the country. Do you have any questions for Drew?
Yeah, it's kind of a interesting way to think about it now, where I'm going, you know, from, you know, the surface up, and you guys are kind of going down below. You know, with us on the mountain, we have a person who's dedicated, or a patroller dedicated to working in dispatch every day. So when the calls come in from around the mountain, they're received, and then the calls are prioritized, and then the resources are dispatched. I'm curious, once a call for assistance is received, well, first of all, where would it most likely be received? And then what's the process of kind of dispatching or launching your resources to respond to a call for service?
Kyle, that's a great question. So the way I will touch on a couple of different ways that this happens. So Grand Canyon National Park has a dedicated dispatch center manned 24/7, just like any large metropolitan area. There's a dispatcher covering Grand Canyon EMS, and actually, interestingly, several other parks in the desert Southwest are dispatched out of Grand Canyon National Park Dispatch Center. But the primary calls for service, the PSAP, if you will, as we're all familiar with in the EMS world, in the disaster world, the primary PSAP is run through Grand Canyon National Park. And that call, if they are on a 911 call, will go straight into our dispatch center. There's a SAR shift coordinator, so there's a search and rescue coordinator on call every day of the year for the Grand Canyon National Park Service, who is the primary contact for a, shall we say, a non-run-of-the-mill, right? If you call and say, I'm having chest pain and I'm in the El Tovar Lodge on the South Rim, that's no different than if you're in Denver or you're in Memphis or New Orleans or here in Albuquerque. We're going to find out what units available, you know, what's the closest unit, dispatch that resource, and we're going to respond like we would in an urban or suburban environment. If you get a notification, and boy, I can't tell you the number of times this happens. It happened just last week while we were out there. Somebody hit their little spot. You know, everybody's familiar with the spot. We're going to come save you, the push your dummy button. And I'd say that kind of tongue in cheek, but those personal locator beacons that have, I think, really proliferated with technology, and as more and more people have been having access to them, they certainly have a place and are appropriate, but we get a lot of notifications from the spot, and I use that because that's the actual trade name for, the professional name for that service, but we get notification that, hey, we've had an emergency beacon activation, and we have coordinates of here, and just last week, actually, this happened while we were out there, where we then have to have coordination through our SAR shift coordinator to determine, are we going to launch an aircraft and go down and determine, is there somebody hurt? Because the presumption, and I think a forward-leaning, out-of-hospital, austere agency such as the Grand Canyon National Park EMS Service is kind of obligated to say, we believe that someone has an emergency until we can prove otherwise. And they flew down the canyon trying to locate someone that had activated their emergency beacon. And we're not able to ever determine or find the individual that owned up and said, yeah, I pushed it by mistake, or, hey, I pushed it and we're not hurt. And that SAR shift coordinator is really the person for the non-front country EMS calls. And that's from a description within the Park Service, both from my work in Grand Canyon as well as in Yellowstone. Front country is things that you can drive to that you normally can put an ambulance at and a fire truck. And we think of those, even if it's remote, but accessible to the conventional EMS realm. If you need to get SAR shift involved, it's because we've got somebody that's at Three Mile House on the South Rim, South Kaibab Trail, trying to figure out if we can get them to the rim. And it provides some unique challenges, and that SAR shift coordinator has a lot of responsibility. And I can't say enough about the work that they do to make the appropriate choices and keep people and the visitors to the Grand Canyon safe and provided to care.
Well, Drew, this is Joe again. That absolutely amazing. You know, I think you, until you get a chance to talk to somebody like you, you have no idea the complexities and the amount of professionalism and work that goes into making a system like this work in an absolutely amazing environment. I know you and I talked briefly about, speaking of sort of cutting edge approaches, you guys had a very forward thinking and pretty cutting edge approach to hemorrhaging patients out there. Can you talk a little bit about your TXA program?
Yeah. So last year, in conjunction with James Thompson, who's the EMS coordinator for the park, and Brandon Torres, who I mentioned before is the branch chief for emergency services, we were looking for ways to improve care and to decrease morbidity and mortality for folks that were visiting the national park there in Grand Canyon. And one of the areas that clearly I think is on the forefront of a lot of people's discussions, maybe not as much so in larger urban environments where you have very short transport times and you know you can get to definitive care. And God, right? I mean, in Memphis, right? If you're 30 minutes from a trauma center in Memphis, I suspect that you spent too much time on the ground, right, Joe?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Nowhere's 30 minutes away.
Exactly. And we're 30 minutes will get you like down the road and through the next little town. And I use town lightly there in the Grand Canyon, and it could be hours or days. And so one of the focuses we looked on in conjunction with the receiving facility for us there in Flagstaff, Arizona, was looking to expand the use of TXA, because we have at the best, and as Joe, as you know, you and I were talking about it last month, it is 78 miles and 1 hour and 30 minutes by ground in the best of circumstances. If from time of injury, we put them immediately into an ambulance on the South Rim and drive as fast as we can to Flagstaff. And as everybody's probably aware of, the TXA recommendations and the benefit from that, from me looking at the crash study data, crash one and crash two, showed, you know, certainly you want to start that within 3 hours, and within 1 hour of time of injury is the best. And so we're already outside of the window, because the logistics involved even in getting a rotor aircraft is certainly going to put somebody outside of that 1 hour, and sometimes can put them outside of the 3 hour. And so we took a very forward-leaning stance to push TXA out to our field crews, both on the front country and in the back country down in the canyon, and put into place the TXA protocol that really mirrors the recommendations from the Crash 1 and Crash 2 data, study data, in terms of traumatic injuries in the out-of-hospital setting with hypotension and some altered mentation, to really get that kind of cutting-edge, forward-leaning care to somebody as early as possible. And unique to the Grand Canyon, we had to consider and calculate and make the appropriate logistical adjustments, because we could have somebody long enough that they need both grams, both the initial bolus and the infusion that is almost exclusively given in most all other EMS realms on each of our providers, because they could have somebody down in the canyon that needs the TXA clearly as the bolus, but we're going to have them way longer than 8 hours. And those are unique logistical challenges that we put into place. And so if you peel off of your boat and get racked up against something down in the canyon, that we're if we can get folks to you quick enough, you're guaranteed to get what would be considered, I think, in a lot of areas, kind of the cutting edge in terms of the earliest protections against possible complications from ongoing hemorrhage. We haven't yet been able to work out with United Blood Services to have whole blood or FFP and PRBCs, but we're working on it.
Well, Drew, that's absolutely amazing, and kudos to you and your team out there for the ability to pull off cutting edge medicine in an area as remote as the moon in many cases. Could you tell us just in a few minutes a little bit about how folks train to work in that area? Is there anything really unique about the training that you put the folks through out there to make them functional in such an environment?
Joe, I think that the standard individual that is drawn to the Park Service has a wanderlust and a desire to really work in some of the most beautiful areas of the country, whether that's the Grand Canyon, currently what we're talking about, or Yellowstone, or as Mike Levy and our friends up in Alaska have access to. They walk to a little bit of a different drum. And I think that lends itself to individuals that, I mean, clearly have to have the basic kind of foundational knowledge base that we all expect from any out-of-hospital practitioner, whether that's at the level of a wilderness first responder, a medical first EMR, the new EMR, basic EMTs, advanced EMTs or paramedics. But beyond that, you get people that are able to think really well on their feet and are able to really also see the kind of longitudinal care, because seldom in front country or urban, suburban, or rural EMS do you have somebody possibly in your care for 12 or 24 hours outside of really austere military environments or Joe, as you and I and many of us do here on the podcast, in the disaster environment where we might be with a patient or multiple patients for a prolonged period. The confines and I think the demands and oftentimes the challenges within the Grand Canyon specifically really attracts an individual that looks to be able to, even as a basic EMT, and I don't use that flippantly because I hate the basic EMT because there are way more basic EMTs in the world than there are paramedics. But providers of out-of-hospital care in the Grand Canyon are masters of being able to prioritize and also improvise as the case may be, because really what you have on your back oftentimes is the only thing that you've got available, and making that go the distance can really make a huge impact on patient care. And having to determine, I've got three patients that need to fly and I can only land one aircraft at a time, and I know that the round trip transit is going to be 20 minutes as the case may be, or maybe longer if they're just going to definitive care, and really forces a clinical decision making and I think a medical savviness that is refreshing in the out of hospital practice environment for all of the providers there in Grand Canyon.
Drew, are they all trained on all the things that they might run into? Like, we're talking everything from swift water to TXA. Does everybody have to be trained in all of that, or do you have different levels of providers?
We do have different levels of providers. So I have from anywhere from a basic EMT up to a paramedic, and there are few within the Park Service. There are very few task specific individuals, and what I mean by that is only paramedicine or only law enforcement or only fire, because anybody within the protective branch for the Park Service, the non-interpretive And it's worth saying. So there's a protective branch which deals with fire, law enforcement, EMS, and resource protection, and then the interpretive provide. So the interpretive rangers, which are there to help explain the ecology and the geology and all of the natural wonders that go along with the park services. Those are typically the two big delineations. There's some other ones that are probably you can, and I will, and please, by all means, I beg of my park service colleagues to give me a little bit of license here as I try and lump the entire park service into two big descriptions. But for those people within the protective branch that look at law enforcement, fire, EMS, very few people are sole providers within just law enforcement or just fire suppression or just EMS. And they are the expectation, really, regardless of level. So you're an EMR or you're an EMT or you're an AMT or you're a paramedic. Clearly, there'll be different levels of practice and different levels of knowledge base, but everybody is expected. You could be a cop, firefighter, paramedic, all in the same day, and maybe even all on the same call for the Park Service, which is unique in the pre-hospital practice environment, in my experience.
That's fascinating. Kyle, you have any other questions? We've got a few minutes here.
Hey, Sam, no other questions. I'm just really intrigued by just, you know, the sophistication of the operations there in such an austere environment. And it's really just humbling to hear that, you know, all these all the medical providers that are out there and all the others that work up to make the medical team, the flight team, et cetera, and how they sounds like everyone trains together and comes together in times of need to help affect a positive outcome for whatever the ailment may be, whatever patient they may have and wherever they may be in the canyon or on the rim. And so from a very complex and challenging environment, it sounds like everyone's out there is pretty dialed. So kudos and thanks so much for coming on the show tonight.
Kyle, I appreciate it. And I just want to make sure there are hundreds of people that day in and day out in Grand Canyon do their absolute best to keep everybody that's safe, that comes to visit the amazing resource that is the Grand Canyon National Park. But I specifically want to kind of mention and recognize Chief Ranger Matt Vanzura, the Branch Services Chief Brandon Torres, and EMS Coordinator James Thompson there for the amazing work that they do. And there are seldom people that work harder to make sure that all of us in the country and actually even around the world have a safe and enjoyable visit to what is clearly and I think arguably one of the true wonders of the United States and within the National Park Service. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk to y'all, and please encourage everybody safely to come visit the Grand Canyon and make sure that they have a wonderful time while they're out there.
Yeah, Drew, I have one last question for you. You touched on it a little bit when we were talking about the different levels of training and the types of training you do. Obviously, to coordinate something like this, I mean, it sounds like you can be very busy, especially at peak tourist times. Tell us a little bit about what you do in the way of training evolutions to try to practice these types of scenarios before you run into them. Do you have an opportunity to do that with the teams?
So twice a year, much like every large, you know, urban EMS system, they at very complex EMS system, there are obviously the refreshers. We have a BLS and an ALS refresher twice a year. And that involves a lot of scenario-based and classroom seat time-based training to go over new protocol updates, kind of the most current science and things like that. In conjunction with that, given the very high level of complexity and the high level of functioning on an ongoing basis, And I wish, boy, I'll tell you what, this is a shout out to my Park Service peeps. If they'd like for me there all the time, I'd be more than happy to, but we got to work out some contract stuff more. But they are very, very forward leaning in terms of the amount of ongoing, both continuing education in terms of run review, case scenario discussions, and also real-time hands-on learning, because for any of you that have ever been to the Grand Canyon, there's this very sheer drop if you walk too far, either south or north, starting on the north or south rim, and that can provide very complicated technical rescue environments that they do on a regular basis, particularly the beginning of every season for the seasonal folks that are coming back on to kind of upstaff all of the providers. And I've been there for many of the evolutions and been able to participate in a lot of the trainings. And they put their people through their paces, because if you've got a 400-foot sheer cliff face and somebody is stuck on it, making sure that you know that people that are going to get them, and I would argue some of the highest trained, most proficient technical rescue high level folks that I have ever had the fortunate nature to work around are based there in the Grand Canyon, and they really make sure both from high angle rescue, haul outs, and even rotor aircraft rescue with short hauls and whatnot, really making sure not even going into the swift water rescue and all of the search and rescue operations that go on a very regular basis, in addition to structural firefighting, wildland firefighting, everything, law enforcement and resource protection. It's amazing the breadth and scope of their duties and their willingness and ability to make sure that they're providing really cutting edge care and amazing resource protection and rescue capabilities on a day in and day out basis there in the Grand Canyon.
That's fascinating. So one last question, Joe, could you ever see doing what Drew does down there? I mean, you're a USAR guy, but like you said, this is quite a bit of very different kind of medicine in a sense. What do you think?
Yes, I'm going to move in with him. So he just doesn't.
Kimberly as well, I'm sure.
That would be absolutely phenomenal USAR training on a everyday basis. I mean, that's like a deployment every day.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yeah, but we just can't drive our big trucks right to it, and that's the downside. That 53-foot transporter is difficult to get to River Mile 59 if we need it.
Yeah, well, you can get it there once. You just won't ever get it out.
Yeah, might not be.
It'll go down. It just won't come back. Well, what do you think, Jamie? Could you see yourself doing something like that?
It's fascinating. Having been there before as a kid, my family went on a trip through the Midwest and through the Southwest. And I remember distinctly my two sisters and I playing a vigorous game of tag right along the rim. My parents took a picture of it, and I looked at it not too long ago and just went, what were we thinking? And I could only, so I could have been one of those rescues if I'd gone left instead of right. So
indeed.
Joe, it just reminds me, we talk a lot about training on here. And of course, Paragon Medical Education Group is a great sponsor of the show and keeps us going and keeps the lights on here in the Disaster Podcast. I just hear training throughout this process of how important it is to train in a real experiential way for the PSAR teams and the rest of the group there to get the job done. And it just brings me back to the type of training you guys do.
Well, I think you're exactly right. I mean, I think Drew is the finest example of that we've ever had on the show. It is literally, the austere environment every day. And it's not just the occasional stuff. So I expect if you want to be really good at it, you go someplace where you do it every day. And that's why those guys are so incredibly good at what they do there.
So if folks want to find out a little bit about how, they can get Paragon Medical Education Group to come into their system and help them have some of this type of, experiential training for whatever their system might expect to run into. Obviously, no one has the experiences that the Grand Canyon presents other than the Grand Canyon. Every national park, of course, has their own challenges, but every city has their own challenges or weather challenges or potential man-made disasters. And they all can have a need to reach out and get that type of training on board. So where can they find you to do that?
Well, you can certainly find us on the web at paragonmedicaleducationgroup.com. You can find us on Facebook under the same name, Paragon Medical Group. And Disaster Podcast is also a great way to get in touch with us.
And Joe, we just want to thank you guys again for continuing to support the show and allow us to bring fantastic guests like Drew here on the program, share with our audience. We really appreciate it. Drew, is there any place that you'd like to share, maybe a resource or a website or something that people can find out more about what happens with the rescue services at the Grand Canyon National Park?
Absolutely. And thank you for asking. I think the biggest shout out and the resource that I can give to folks, if you just Google search Grand Canyon PSAR, that's Grand Canyon PSAR. There's several things that will pull up. They have some HikeSmart podcasts, and I really would direct people to the PSAR, Saving Lives at the Grand Canyon, from the Grand Canyon Association, which really will help talk about the preventive search and rescue program and the focus that has, because when the biggest thing that PSAR and all of the men and women for the National Park Service want folks to have is an enjoyable, safe experience when you visit any of the national parks. We're speaking of the Grand Canyon, but any of them. And specific to the Grand Canyon, there are some unique challenges, and having people aware of how to hike smart and how to make sure they're taking the necessary protective measures to keep themselves safe and able to get back, because down's voluntary, up is mandatory, and knowing what they can do to keep themselves prepared and in having the most enjoyable visit would really go a long way as we continue to have increased visitation to the Grand Canyon. So I give a shout out to the PSAR folks and PSAR at Grand Canyon for all the work that they've done, and everybody within the emergency services branch there for the work that they do.
And I'll have links to all that in the show notes for this episode. It's actually going to be a double episode. We'll actually span 2 weeks with it, but I'll make sure there's links to everything we've talked about. And I already done that Google search and found that link earlier in the show just to kind of figure out what I was going to be putting in the show notes when the time came. So I already have that ready to go, and I'll pull some other links up as well. So thanks again, Drew, for coming on the show.
Appreciate it. Thank you all for having me. And if you're ever in the Southwest, we can come out. And there's more than Breaking Bad to Albuquerque. So I just want everybody to know.
That's awesome. Kyle, how about you? Where can people find you?
Well, I'm on all the social medias under the handle WX Kyle Nelson. And there you can follow along with me both on the slopes and in the classroom as I travel across the U.S.
Excellent. And thanks again for your continuing weather reports as we continue to deal with some pretty crazy weather here in the United States. So appreciate your time. Sam, where can folks find you?
Well, like Kyle, in the usual social media places under either Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11. Also on our Facebook page on that we have for the podcast, which, Drew, I would love if you would hook up to that. That way you can kind of stay in tune with the topics and people can ask you questions if they have them. And the disasterpodcast.com website, where people also have the opportunity to come on and give feedback and ask questions and tell us what you want us to talk about. What about you, Jamie?
Well, you can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media channels out there, and of course over at disasterpodcast.com and on the Disaster Podcast Facebook page. So you can just join that group. It's easy to find. Just search Disaster Podcast in Facebook and just request to join the group. That's all it takes, and we'll let you in. And there's some great conversations. The weekly episodes are posted there, and it's a great way to start a conversation with some like-minded people. We have, I don't know, 400 or 500 people in that group right now, and it continues to grow, and we want you in there as well. So please join us. You know, Sam, boy, we haven't had an example of austere medical care like this in quite a while, and probably ever, I think, on the show.
This was a very unique topic, and I loved it because I love the Grand Canyon, as I've said more than once. But it's just, this is probably the most extreme example of what we always talk about, that austere medicine, disaster medicine, is not our everyday medicine.